Hi there, listeners. Welcome to More Than a Wheelin', episode 26.
Yeah.
Let's run up the flagpole and see if the cat licks it. That kind of works, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
My name is Sean M. Wheelin, your host.
And I'm Ben, Tuffy, as known to my friends, or Tuffy the Great White Spruker when I'm rapping, or Tuffy Blood when I'm rocking. What else?
I think that's fine. Longest intro ever. Thank you. Hi there, everybody. Welcome to More Than a Wheelin', a podcast about creative writing written by me and occasional special guests, but most importantly, inspired by you. Hi there, listeners. Welcome to More Than a Wheelin'. We are coming at you not from downtown sunny Collingwood Castaway Studios. This is quite a unique episode, actually, because we're coming at you from Golden Plains.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're in a little shipping container. We're staying at the Rochester. And I'm very, very happy to welcome Ben Tuffy Lee into the studio.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean.
Of a type.
The shipping container. The luxury glamping container.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... Ben, Tuffy, Great White Spruker, Dirty Blood. I'm just trying to go through all your aliases here.
Yeah.
So let's give some background on you first for our listeners. Who are you?
Sure.
What do you do?
What do I do? Creatively or in general? Or
Well, creatively. Let's start right there.
Okay.
And we'll move through the other sources.
Look, I've done a bit of writing on and off for years, but
yes.
Only in the last few years got a band happening and
that's right.
Fulfilling a kind of childhood dream.
Yeah.
Turned 40 and started a band,
yeah.
As you do.
Yeah,
midlife crisis, went to Nepal, got a tat and started a band. So, and, you know, I've always had a creative urge and have been drawn to it, but this has given me a chance to fully realise it. So, yeah, I'm having fun. We've recorded an album and we're working on another
one. Dirty Bloods.
With the Dirty Bloods, sorry, yeah.
So, before we get to the Dirty Bloods, let's go back away, because you and I go back away.
Yeah, about 25 years, I reckon.
Yeah. And... So we kind of started DJing around the same time, actually. basically started at parties and stuff, and then...
Tuffy Selector.
my first DJ name, I saw it on a flyer once.
Nice Boy?
No, even before Nice Boy. DJ Nice Boy, I've forgotten about that one. I was DJ Funky Fried Chicken.
Nice. That's
a terrible name. I don't know what I was thinking.
Second only to a Jewish kid I knew whose tag was, you know, graffiti artists used to tag all the time, especially in the 90s. His tag was My Mother Boils Cabbage.
What?
Awesome. So, you know.
Yeah.
I love a good nerdy,
So that was the sort of start of some of the creative stuff you're doing, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
And I used to hang around at Babel with you guys doing your spoken word and stuff, and then I'd get inspired or drunk enough to go up and do one of my four-line poems.
Oh, so, Penguin.
Yeah, Penguin, Water.
Oh,
so,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. No editing, and if it took more than a minute to write, it was thrown out.
Love it. The spontaneity.
Yeah.
So Babel was a night that I was involved in and you were involved in that started out at Bar Open and Revolver as well.
Yeah,
it was
man.
Like a multi-arts evening.
It made poetry very rock and roll.
Yeah, and
that's it was cool.
That's where I cut my teeth as a poet, I guess you'd say, because I'd never done much before I started doing that. And then... it evolved into me just sort of getting up on stage and then into actually running it. And, well, we used to run it like would take turns in running it. Yep. Emily Zoe Baker would do it as well. And then eventually somehow I ended up running it on my own and doing it every week.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
They're very, very, very good times.
Yeah, well, it was really great because it was a relaxed, happy, kind of semi-drunken atmosphere. It was kind of loose enough to be, you know, not self-conscious, but really well-regarded, and the crowd was supportive and would hype you up and stuff. I thought it was great.
Yeah, as I say, it wasn't always just poetry. It was like musicians and artists and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you started performing with Daryl.
Zeke, that's Zeke. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So the way that would happen was he was doing this Moby kind of inspired electronic music, and he was sampling sort of samples from films like The Big Lebowski and stuff, but he started to get a little bit of traction, and it was sort of became obvious pretty quick that he wasn't going to be able to get copyright on those things.
Right.
So essentially I'd just make up, freestyle some crazy ranting like it was from a film, and then he'd sample that and use that. So that worked quite well. We did probably half a dozen tracks together.
I love that EP, and I think it's actually on Spotify now.
It might be.
Yeah.
I think it's just Zeke self-titled, isn't it?
Yeah.
So my job was just to get refreshed and rant.
Yeah.
So it was perfect. And then he'd take it away, sample it, disappear into his room for a few days and come back with a masterpiece. And my effort in input was minimum. That was perfect. Yeah.
Emily Zoe Baker did one of those tracks too, didn't she?
Yeah, SMS. That was SMS. A great track.
Yes, and yes.
That
amazing.
Just involved some live ranting in the background.
Amazing.
I guess that's how it came up with the name Tuffy the Great White Spruker.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't really rapping. It was more like a cross between toasting and spruking, or ranting.
Yeah.
Came naturally and it worked well, I thought. So. Good fun.
Loved it.
Yeah.
And then somehow, eventually, that morphed into you forming your own band, Dirty Bloods.
About 4 years ago. So that was a childhood dream. I sort of wanted to be in bands when I was 16, and then I sort of got busy and distracted with other things, and then that I was drawn to it, and it never went away.
Mm.
And when I got to 40, I thought, I've got to do this or I'm never going to do it. And I had this weird sense, this feeling like, oh, next time, like I'll do a band next time, as if like in another life or something.
Right.
Hard to explain, a subconscious thing. And I suddenly caught myself going, what are you fucking talking about? Like, you're going to do it. It needs to be now.
There's no next time. Yeah. It's this time.
Yeah. So formed it with some mates. We're all, 40-year-old dads. So we called it Dad Punk.
Dad Punk.
Felt right
love
to
it.
Us. Combination of sort of punk and, I don't know, hard rock and, although I hate the term hard rock, but sort of grunge and metal a bit. But we've all wanted to do it, and it's been a really nice creative outlet. And given us a chop out from our real lives as dads and employees and all that, you know.
Mm.
And I think it's quite different doing it when you're older, because there's no expectation or ambition that you're going to become rock stars or get somewhere.
Yeah, you're just doing it for what it is.
For the process,
yeah.
I think my brother taught me that. And other creatives like you and other artists I know have taught me that if you can love the process, then you've already won, right? And then
absolutely.
Anything else is a bonus.
Yeah, everything else is gravy.
Yeah. And that's how we've been treating it. We're just stoked to play a gig, stoked to record.
Yeah.
It's all just fun, man, so...
You've recorded one album,
like a mini LP, I guess, eight tracks,
and that's on Bandcamp, or
I think it's on Bandcamp,
yeah.
We haven't put it on any of streaming yet.
Well, I'll drop some links to that in the show notes.
Yeah, cool.
And you're recording a new album now.
We're working on new material, and it's improved a lot. So when we first started, it was me and my mate Con on guitar and me singing and writing words to his songs, or the other way around, songs to my words. But since we added the bass player and the drummer, they were helping us on our original songs, but this new wave of songs we've all written together and everyone's had input. And we've been in the rehearsal space and jammed together, and it's felt like everyone. So it's brought a different a more interesting feel.
Right. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did your first live performance?
Yeah.
Was that at Swamplands?
Yeah, we've played nearly all of our gigs at Swamplands. I think we've had 6 gigs and one at the Bendigo to 3 people. We're a bit fucking particular about when we perform too. So, like, it's got to be a Saturday night because we're all too tired on a Friday. Sunday's no good. Got to work. Don't do it during the week.
Yeah.
Saturday afternoon matinee would be ideal, but, you know. Right. Because we get tired, you see.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's very punk.
I feel you. I'm tired now.
I'm tired just talking to you. But Saturday night crowd's great too because most of our audience are, you know, middle-aged mums and dads and they get a bit loose and once they've had some drinks, then it's really good fun.
Yeah, that show at Swamplands was awesome.
Yeah.
Everyone did get a bit loose and got a bit wild. And,
yeah.
They weren't, like, too cool for school, though, nah. You know. Were you nervous about that first gig?
Yeah, well, the first few gigs I had that. You know how they say it's bad if you're not nervous at all, like you want to be a bit nervous because it means you don't care enough.
Exactly. It means, you know, there's something at stake if you're a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
You're treating it with that respect.
But after about 4 gigs then, because I'd be so sick with nerves, I couldn't hear anything or I wouldn't enjoy it basically.
Mm.
But in the last 2, I've been sick again, but I've been able to enjoy it. So that feels like I'm starting to get to a breakthrough point. So
right, yeah.
Got to feel a little bit sick, but not so sick you can't enjoy it.
Yeah, I find I get nervous before every live performance. But once I start, that seems to just flow away.
Yeah, right.
Once I get started, then unless I think about being nervous and then you just sort of self-generate it.
Yeah, right.
But most of the time it flows and goes to another place and then I'm just in the zone, yeah.
Well, once you've started, it's too late, isn't it?
Well,
it's like,
that's
we're here now, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's that leading up where you could still, I guess, back out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I do often get this phobia that my fly is down.
It's funny you should mention that. I think it was when I turned 40, I've got this old man syndrome where I always forget to do my fly up. So I catch myself at work 2 hours later, I've been walking around with my fly undone. You know, turned 40, woke up, my knees ached, I started listening to Radio National and leaving my fly unzipped. It was automatic, man.
Living the dream.
Yeah.
I also realized I have this other weird phobia the other night. I saw a band called the Orb Weavers, who are wonderful,
and
I'm going to have them as guests on the podcast as soon as I can.
Yeah.
They did a wonderful show as part of the Brunswick Music Festival at Brunswick Mechanics Institute.
Yeah.
But they had this trumpet player, and I don't know this is going to. I don't even know if I'm going to put this in because it's so weird. I may have to cut this out.
No censorship.
But when I see a trumpet player approach a mic, I think it came from a dream once. I always think they're going to try to play trumpet and then they'll just be really bad at it.
Yeah, right.
And they just go. But I will feel their pain because I hate seeing people fail in public.
Wow.
Yeah.
Preemptive, empathetic, shared neurosis or something. Better than the new, right? So if you can have someone more, like I was saying earlier before we're on air, if you can have someone with you who's more scared or more neurotic than you, then you're suddenly empowered.
Right. That's the key?
Yeah, I think so.
You just have to find up people are more fucked up than you are.
That's right.
Carry them around with you in your suitcase.
Like I say at work, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, so which works very well in the public service, so
right,
yeah.
Anyway. I should clarify that I don't know her name, I can't remember her name, but she nailed it. This trumpet player, she was amazing, amazing. They always do, it's only in my dreams where they fail miserably, Who knows where that comes from? I'll have to talk to my psychiatrist. You are my psychiatrist and my attorney.
And attorney,
by the way.
We'll unpack that later. But it'll obviously be to do with something deep, some deep sexual neurosis, and probably something about your mother. Isn't that right? Isn't that what it usually is?
Yeah. Thank God my mother doesn't listen to this podcast.
Yeah, good.
She'd be slapping me on the wrist for all the swearing, for starters. Look, I can't think of a better location than Golden Plains to unpack some shit, right?
Mm, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, Dirty Bloods, So, you're working on a new one now. Is that correct?
Yeah, new songs. It feels like it's become, before it was just sort of straight out punk or garage punk because that was easy to hide behind, easy to sing a bit rough and ready. Mm. I think when I've done creative stuff in the past, it's always been, especially my poetry and stuff, has always been comedic or almost a joke, but that was a defense mechanism.
If, right, you know, that's
if
interesting.
If I make it a joke, then I can't be judged on it, right? So this stuff now, I'm taking it seriously. So that means I leave myself open to being judged. But there's still a natural vein of humor in there, so... But, yeah, it was weird. I used to hide behind that. If I make it a joke, then, you know, even if it's bad, no, that can be part of the deal, right? So
yes, that's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, just hide.
Defense mechanism, because and now you put yourself in a more vulnerable position.
Yeah.
Doing this dad punk thing.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. But there's certainly some elements of humor in there as well.
Yeah, that comes naturally.
That footy song, what's that called?
Friday Night Footy.
Love it.
So, the humor has to... I had to come to terms with a whole lot of stuff and accept things about how I write and what I do and what comes naturally. And one of the things was rhyming. I'm a rhymer and I can't help it. And when I try to do something different, it comes across as forced or self-conscious.
You could have at least dropped a rhyme in there when you said that.
I save it for the tunes. But no, it's that. If I change gears and try not to rhyme and sound more like Tom Waits, it doesn't come off well.
Right.
No, really self-conscious. Or if I sit down and try and write, it feels forced as well. So I've kind of got to be distracted. So
walk me through this. Walk me through your songwriting process.
So it'll be if I'm mowing the lawn or having a shower or something like that, and some creativity will come. But because I'm being distracted as well by the thing that I'm doing, it allows thoughts and creativity to come through without a filter, because I can't, you know, mow the lawn, come up with ideas and filter it at the same time.
Right.
So what comes out is more honest and more sincere.
Yeah.
If I sit down at a desk, Nick Cave style, and try to work on it, it just comes out as forced. If I try to go against my natural urge to rhyme, it comes out as self-conscious. So I really got to be distracted enough to just let it flow, right? The worst one is when I'm meditating. So I'll be fucking trying to meditate and then this stuff will come in. I'll have to stop and write it on my
monkey
phone.
Monkey mind.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. So you let these songs sort of like simmer on the stove top of your mind while you're like mowing the lawn or having a shower or doing these things. But then you'll just sit down and write it out.
Well, I might repeat, come up with a verse in the shower and I'll repeat it heaps to myself so I don't forget it. And then often I've quickly had to get out while I'm wet and write the next verse because it also can't turn it off. So I go, oh, no, I'll just save that for later on when I'm on my break at work. But then it's coming back to me in the car on the way to work, so I have to do a voice memo. So it's, when it's flowing, I just have to try and harness it. So that it's not self-conscious.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Completely. I find that really interesting, actually. Yeah.
If I try to fight it or filter it in any way, it just sounds contrived.
Right.
So, and sometimes you come up with some terrible crap. Like it's got to be honest and unfiltered. So, you know, I heard a songwriter saying that 90% of what you write will have to go in the bin. So that sort of took me a bit to come to terms with, especially if you write something you're really proud of, but it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
So that was helpful. So when you're doing that free flowing thing, there's some embarrassing shit, but there's always some gold as well.
Oh, totally. And that garbage stuff that you write, that's all part of getting up the mountain to the good stuff.
Yeah, right.
So it's not, it is frustrating to because you feel like maybe that was a waste of time, but it's all just part of the process.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
coming back to meditation, I remember my mate saying there's no such thing as bad meditation, because even when you're having a bad meditation, you're still forming a habit. And I guess the same with writing.
Do you meditate as a daily practice?
Well, when I'm running well, it's funny. I sort of was doing it every morning for a couple of years, and it's dropped away a bit recently. It's funny, when I'm running well, I do it, and then I sort of let it go. And then I'm running poorly, I forget to do it. I don't have time, but that's when I should be doing it.
Did that start after you did your trip to Nepal, or was it previous to that, or
the meditation?
No, before that
I started getting into it a bit, looking for a bit of meaning. Did a bit of time in the Buddhist temple in Frankston, Lama Tenda in Franger.
Shout out.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Loves his food. Bit of food on Facebook. But I found to run well, I have to, like, run well mentally, I have to exercise, meditate, and get some creative outlet.
Yeah.
So if I'm writing a little bit, meditating and exercising.
All food for the soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could stay on an even keel, but it's you know, because I don't drink anymore, it's like a two-hour dedication a day or an hour takes the place of three or four beers, you know, so it's work and it's a commitment, but it's obviously more sustained and feels better when you keep it up. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I did have a sort of meditation practice, but I haven't done it for ages. And and speaking to you now makes me realize I really need to jump back in there. It is hard when you first start because it's hard to keep your mind. But as you said before, even a bad meditation is a good meditation.
That's right. It's practice.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have a busy mind and thoughts rush in, so you need to distract yourself. So I'll do a mantra, because if you're doing I think your brain can do three things at once, I've been told. So if I listen for sounds and I'm doing a mantra and I'm noticing my breathing, there's no room for thoughts.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, it does.
But yeah, the funny thing about it is to try and get back to a good place. And if your head's a mess, sit down and meditate. It's just going to bring it all into focus.
Yeah.
You're just going to focus on the crazy, right? So
I don't know.
It's challenging.
So part of the More Than a Whelan experience is me responding to creative prompts from our listeners, which I will do a little bit later in this episode. But I wanted to talk to you about this because you did a similar kind of experience with the band, correct?
Yeah. So I really like what you do on this show, because we've talked about it before, but working with parameters is much easier, right?
It is.
Yeah.
And the parameters are a little bit of an illusion, really, because you can still – they're not restrictive at all, because you can still write about anything. But when I – if I sit down to try and write something and I've got like, and I can write about it,
that's too much.
Too much choice can be paralyzing.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So somebody just throwing some subjects in front of me just sort of laser focuses your creative mind, I find. Yeah.
You need an anchor point or a start point.
Absolutely.
If you can write about anything, it's like going onto Spotify without an algorithm. You know, you're going to be drowning in a sea of 10 million songs. Where do you start? I think parameters are. At least the starting point, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I find all of my favorite writing has been things that have been based on themes, actually, that people have thrown at me or for competitions or whatever. Yeah.
I think that's where rhyming helps me. After I gave up fighting it, now I rhyme and that comes naturally, so be it. But that works as a parameter for me too, because then I have a sort of a formula that I have to try and fit ideas into.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's very satisfying when you do find that appropriate line.
Yeah, you can cheat and get on Rhyme Zone. There's a Rhyme Zone on the net. That's pretty cool. So do we want to talk about this song?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, cool. So the boys, sometimes they get together without me. I feel a bit like it's a conspiracy because I don't play an instrument, so I just sing and write the lyrics, and then often they jam without me and come up with some music, and I got a bit paranoid about that at first, but now I'm just like, oh, well, let them go.
Yeah.
But they'd been working on this tune called, terrible working name, Elbows Akimbo, right?
Elbows Akimbo.
Elbows Akimbo. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they worked it up and they sent me a WAV file or whatever via email, and that's how we do a lot of stuff. And they're trying to be smartasses. They go, oh, yeah, Elbows Akimbo, it's about a Botswanan marathon runner. See what you can do with that, Tuffy. And then...
Challenge accepted.
Oh, man, it came to me like a bolt of lightning. In 5 minutes, I wrote this whole song.
Well, yeah. Would you like to read it for us?
Yeah, sure. So, the more set or specific the parameters, in some ways it's easier to write to. But anyway,
I dig it.
I'll give it a go. So I had to Google a Botswanan name. So apparently Azul is a common name for Botswanan fellas. So the song
checks out.
We'll get to our researchers to double check. So it's called Ode to Azul. Here we go. He was born running for his dinner ain't coming. 52 Ks for the Jezet before the Giselle lays down from exhaustion and presents its throat. The elders catch up and dispatch that goat. As he grew older, he kept on running for the child soldiers and their handlers are coming into his teens and into his dreams. When he thinks about racing his face, it beams. Maybe one day he can leave the dirt and run a marathon in a Botswana t-shirt.
Yeah.
Olympics back then, as did the UK. Mama said, cool if dad's okay. Tried out for the team and officials were keen, but his elbow stuck out like nothing they'd seen. No denying he had some speed, but a guy like Azul did they really need? And the chorus is, all because his elbows are akimbo, now his dreams they are in limbo. Should have stuck to chasing prey, maybe life is better that way. And then repeat.
Boom! Well, I feel like you should be doing that on the main stage here at Golden Plains. Maybe you should just jump up between bands and just fucking drop that on them.
Stage invade and do it.
Yeah.
Well, what I've realized too, because I was struggling with songwriting a bit, and I listened to an interview with Rick Rubin, and I think because I listen to so much hip-hop, I write to the rhythm, not the melody. A lot.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to fit that sometimes to rock and roll.
Was that Rick Rubin interview with Marc Maron?
I think it was another one.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I've heard him speak on it a few times, but suddenly it made sense to me, like, oh, fuck, I think I'm writing to the rhythms. I'm writing rap.
Yeah.
It probably fits with the rhyme, but
yeah.
But that was a satisfying experience because it was 5 minutes. You know, I've got the rhyme bit, I've got the Botswanan bit, marathon runner, I'm locked in.
Yeah.
And then there's not too many places you can go with the lyrics, right? You've sort of...
Yeah.
It funnels you.
Right, yes. Yeah. Has that been recorded?
We've got some sort of rehearsal recordings, but that'll be on the next album, I think.
Great. Yeah. Great. Awesome. Love it.
It's a bit of light relief because most of the other songs are about mental health and dysfunctional love.
Right. Or Friday Night Footy.
Yeah, Friday Night Footy.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you for that contribution.
No worries, man.
I will read a poem that I haven't written yet, so I'm actually going to hit pause and then write this poem.
Should I provide you with some parameters?
You should, yeah. Yeah, I would welcome that.
Yeah.
We'll be using one of my listener supply prompts.
Oh, good.
But I'd like you to throw a prompt at me too.
Yeah.
In fact, look, do you have something right now?
I'm thinking like a Fijian discus thrower or something like that.
Really?
That's right.
That seems like a bit too much on point with yours. Let's go outside of those parameters.
Okay.
Look, yeah, whatever.
I'll have to think about that.
All right.
I'm going to have a piss anyway.
All right, we're just going to take a little pause here from Golden Plains.
Yeah.
And we'll be back in a moment. Let's go to a commercial.
Hi, this awesome podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting facilities for the full range of podcasters, from training beginners right through to full season packages. Find us on all the social medias under Castaway Studios.
All right, we are back. It's currently raining at Golden Plains. Liz Phair just finished her set, but it was a perfect time to retire back to the shipping container and for me to write a poem. And I think I have done that. So should I please crack that one open?
Please, okay. Without further ado.
All right. So I'm writing this poem to the creative prompt sent by one of our beloved listeners, Ella Fonowska, and her prompt was first times of all things. So cool. Thank you, Ella. That makes you a more than a wheel and muse of the week. I like that. Thanks, Cracker. So that means I'm going to send you some sweet More Than the Wheel and merch.
We are.
Proudly produced by our very generous supporter, Lux Country.
Bam.
And I'll talk a little bit more about them later. So that was the prompt I used, and this is the poem I wrote in a shipping container on the hill overlooking the SUP at Golden Plains. It's called First. My first kiss was at midnight on a boat shed deck on a Moynton beach. She made me listen to Echo and a Bunnymen's Killing Moon on her Walkman. The headphones dropped from my head as she kissed me into oblivion. My first taste of marijuana was from a bucket bong in a rock and roll St Kilda share house. A baptism of THC fire. My first punch I ever received was at 15 years old playing football for Ballura against Dramana. I tried to wrestle him away from a teammate who was also pummeling, and then he turned around and punched me directly in the face. It's true, you really do see stars. My first sex was in a bedroom in Seaford while her mother baked cookies in the kitchen. To this day, the smell of freshly baked cookies produces a Pavlovian tingle in my loins. Oh,
dear God.
My first time in a plane was flying to Mexico on a one-way ticket with my girlfriend, who I would marry only a few years later. We broke up 18 months after getting married and divorced. I remember holding my hand tightly as the plane took off. My first breakup was in the Melbourne Botanical Gardens on a clear, bright, sunny day, which led to the second and last time I was punched, as she pummeled my chest with her fists while tears streamed down her face. My first record I ever owned was the Beach Boys' Greatest Hits, a birthday present from my parents. My first record I ever bought with my own money was Pat Benatar Live, because I was in love with her and certain we would marry one day. Love is a battlefield. My first car was a 1965 bottle green Hillman Minx. I drove it all the way home from the seller's house with the handbrake still on, and I was terrified that I had ruined it. I hadn't. I also used to keep a bunch of plastic flowers spread across the dashboard because I wanted to be Morrissey.
Morrissey. No band of a spawn to fuck with. Sorry, dude. Couldn't resist.
That's fair. Has never been my first, because everything that's happened before and will happen again.
Yeah, right on.
All right. Since we started that, a band started up.
The Living Eyes, man.
Living Eyes are rocking it. I think it'll still work doing this. We'll press on.
Yeah, forward to victory.
Yes. So now it is time for Wheeling and Stealing. The segment where I and my guests read some of their favourite works that don't belong to them. We steal them and we put them back out into the universe in a different form. You have something for me, Tuffy?
We were talking about this, weren't we? I really like play on words stuff, and then I couldn't think of one example, but I know right. Kanye is a bit of a master and a lot of rappers are. I like the way Tom Waits will grab like a old cliche or a line from a fairy tale and put a twist on it. But I also like stuff that's kind of, how do we describe it? Sort of bogan but cultured, sort of stupid but clever. And
stupid but clever.
Stupid but clever.
Yeah.
Thinking is stupid.
Yeah.
And I think TISM do this really, really well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And I like the way they flip shit on its head. Like there's a really good poem about these guys and how their mate ends up getting addicted to home renovation, happy marriage in suburbia, you know.
Right.
Lines like, at first only, you know, at first only little things began to go wrong. He wouldn't come round when we were having a bong. Or never was his face so ravaged with addiction as the week that he showed me his brand new kitchen. I love that shit, you know.
I love it too. Now, before you press on, just to give our listeners some context, our overseas listeners, for instance, may not be aware of TISM. So TISM was an acronym for This Is Serious Mum.
Yeah.
And they were like, what period?
90s, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing kind of... satirical band, I guess, who wore masks and they wore these crazy costumes.
Yeah.
And there's like eight or something.
Yeah,
in the band
made up of teachers and lawyers and
So they kept their identity secret, and they were very, very good at just taking the piss out of Australian society, really.
Yeah,
but also very musically good, great. Although they always sort of were very. They sort of played it down that they were shit, but they were actually quite good.
Well, that's the thing with bands like that. The really good ones are really, really good lyrically and musically. Like, I went and saw, I don't know how I missed them, but Ween for the first time.
Yeah.
And they're a sort of a satirical band, but didn't realise they're fucking amazing musicians too.
Yeah.
So really.
Yeah, exactly.
Mind-blowingly good, but still funny. So
yeah.
So,
I don't even know if TISM are on the streaming services. It's a good question. But, I'll probably drop some YouTube stuff of theirs in the show notes. But, yeah, what have you got for us?
Well, here's another one I like. It's kind of a song. I guess it could be read as a poem, but it's called The Foster's Car Park Boogie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll just go for it.
Go for it.
I'm a bogan, baby, always was. I'm only happy when I punch a mod. And in walked a pinehead turd. I looked at my mates and said, thank you, God. I saw him laugh when they played Bon Jovi. He had a jacket on just like a bikie. If there's a bigger mod, could you please show me? Jumped up little bludger. Me and my mates were gathered round. What was on? Well, nothing much. Had a pair of mockers on. My denim was nearly crushing my crutch. Thought that we'd go into town, but then I said, well, what the fuck? Foster's car park, as I've always found, just hang around there and I'm in luck. And the chorus is, snot nose jumped up little bludger. When I see you, wanna punch ya. We followed him out of the pub, told him rock and roll would never die. Then down on the dirty bitumen, me and my mates showed him just why. This is my favourite bit. Do you want to die for art? Do you wear black leather pants? Then come on down to Foster's car park and me and the boys will give you your chance. Snot-nosed little bludger. Jumped up little bludger when I see you want to punch her. Yeah, so there you go.
I remember guys like that very well from growing up in Moynton. The sort of guys that, you know, if you're walking through a pub and you accidentally sort of just bump into one of them, they'll turn around and go, yeah, you want to go?
That's right. What are you looking at?
Yeah.
And no bigger insult than if you're asked for a lighter and you don't have one and then they're allowed to punch you.
Yeah, that's right. That's how it works growing up.
Yeah.
It's educational.
Yeah.
Character building, one might say.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. That was an excellent contribution to Wheeling and Stealing. I dug that a lot. And now I'm going to read a poem by a guy called Matt Cook. Now, this featured on a CD that was called The United States of Poetry. That came out in 1996, I believe. And it was also like a TV show as well. Bob Holman, I think, was behind putting this together. And it's got a lot of great stuff on it. You can track down that CD. Leonard Cohen's on it.
Emily XYZ, Myers Bartlett, she's amazing. There's even an Allen Ginsberg poem on it. But this poem, talking about stupid and clever, this poem just blew my mind the first time I heard it, because this guy's got such a crazy good voice for it. And if you're a fan of James Joyce, then you might want to
tune out now.
Tune out now for the next couple of minutes. But, you know, look, it's just taking a piss. Don't take it seriously, for God's sake. Okay, so this is a poem by Matt Cook, and it's just called James Joyce Poem. And I'm going to try to recreate his voice, which could go badly.
Do it.
Okay. James Joyce, he was stupid. He didn't know as much as me. I'd rather throw dead batteries at cows than read him. Everything was going fine before he came along. He started the Civil War. He tried to get the French involved, but they wouldn't listen. They filled him up with desserts. He talked about all the great boxers that came from Ireland, like he trained them or something. Then he started reading some of his stuff right as we told him to get lost. He brought up the potato famine. We said, your potatoes are plenty good. Deal with it. Work it out somehow. Then he said, America must adopt the metric system. It's much more logical. We said, no, we like our rulers. Go away. Thomas Jefferson said, you always get the rulers you deserve.
Booyah. I love that.
Yeah. Fucking great poem. Clever and stupid.
That's right. Clever stupid, just saying it like it is.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I'll drop a... And just to see how appalling my impersonation of his voice really was, I'm going to drop a link to the... There's a YouTube clip of him doing that poem in a car park in front of a 7-Eleven, maybe Foster's car park, maybe. And you can listen to Matt Cook doing it as well. So I think that might be bringing us to a close.
That's a wrap.
Oh, hang on. No, wait, wait. What's coming up in the world of Tuffy, Dirty Bloods?
Oh, yeah. So we only sort of do one gig every few months.
Yeah.
And it has to be on a Saturday night, as I said earlier, preferably matinee.
Matinee.
Because we're old dads. But no, we've got a band that we've been working with, other old dads, playing music called Trash and the Treasures. They've supported us a few times. They're launching their album in June at Swamplands again. 15th of June, and we're going to support
Trash and the Treasures are fantastic. Yeah.
Great guys, great band.
Yeah. Highly recommend seeing that.
Yeah.
And look, this is a very special edition too of More Than a Whelan, because I managed to catch up with one of my favourite poets in all the land, who we mentioned previously as you having collaborated with Cracker, Tuffy, is Emily Zobaker.
Oh, Easy B, yeah, right, cool.
So Emily was – my original vision for this podcast was to have Emily co-host it with me, but she's so freaking busy. She does a lot of teaching and stuff that she couldn't commit to doing something once a week. But I did manage to get a little moment with her at Fairfield Boathouse on a beautiful sunny day. And she read a couple of poems for me, and one was an original one, and she also did one for Wheelin' and Stealin'. So I'm gonna throw to those recordings now.
Yeah, cool.
And then I'll be back after that to sign out. But thank you, Ben Tuffy Lee, for being a guest on location at Golden Plains.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thanks, man. Great location.
Beautiful experience.
Great fun.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, here's Emily Zoe Baker.
So I wrote this for Rap Party, where a bunch of writers and poets and singers were given a rap song to respond to, or they get to choose a rap song to respond to. And I chose Blackalicious's Alphabet Aerobics, and this is the story. So my day job is teaching poetry in primary and high schools. I travel to different schools and I try to force them to adore the amazing shapes that language can make. They mainly look at me like I'm from another planet or go, oh my God, miss, ugh. It can be draining and sometimes I want to go home and drown myself in a trough of wine. And by sometimes, I mean always. When presenting, I try to show them crazy stuff like Drugal poetry, experimental concrete, sound poems, pretty much anything that isn't Rupi Kaur. I also introduce the devices, similes, metaphors, personification, and alliteration. I used to demonstrate alliteration with a tongue twister or two, like, you know, she sells seashells by the seashore, Betty bought a bit of butter, but the bit of butter Betty bought was bitter, so Betty bought a better bit of butter, you know, that kind of thing. But now I use Blackalicious's alphabet aerobics. It's a brilliant track that goes through the entire alphabet with alliterated lyrics. I'll give you the ABC. It's artificial amateurs aren't at all amazing. Analytically, I assault animate things. Broken barriers bounded in by the bomb beat. Buildings are broken. Basically, I'm bombarding. Casually create catastrophes, casualties. Cancelling cats, got the canopies collapsing. And so on. The other reason I use this is 4 years ago, Daniel Radcliffe went on Jimmy Fallon and did a bang-smackingly perfect cover version, which went bananas viral. Now when I go into schools and ask, who can do the A to Z of alphabet aerobics? Hands shoot up like little tomato plants. The first time it happened, I was in an outer suburban school with a bunch of bangry year eights, mainly boys with itchy knees and scuffed up shoes, rolled up eyes and mini Billy Idol sneers. I told them about the rap. Then this girl, the shyest one in the year level, I'm told, was poked by her friend and said, she can do it. And I was like, you can rap that? That's one of the hardest, most complicated rap songs ever written. And she grimaced with terror as she knew what was coming next. Her friend pushed her to the front. I gave her the mic and asked her her name. And she said, Olivia A. And I was like, okay, Olivia A. Now it's time for our rapper. Let's give her everything we got. And it was super cute. This little year eight, her mouth full of badass Blackalicious bomb beats. She was like a little garden flamingo, all wobbly on her wire legs. But as she got going, she started to kind of lose her inhibitions. Her hands dropped from a tight fist into a little brush drum. And the boys stopped sneering. They shuffled up in their seats. The teachers from the library wandered in like they were hypnotized. She felt it. She started owning the room. She swung herself from letter to letter like Tarzan if Tarzan were Wonder Woman. A and B started shakily, but by D, she delivered, dazzling the doubters. Even disengaged Daniel mouthed the word dope. It was the freshest thing her friends had ever seen, their freaked out faces, exclamation marks made flesh. By the time she got to G, it was OMG. Her heart skipping rope to the beat the kids were making and the fact that hilariously Harry Potter somehow made this historical howl-like moment happen, lifting her invisibility cloak because her friend insisted her individuality inspiring all those that identify as introverts. I was making full Jimmy Fallon face. Kids just don't jam like this because they feel so judged. Their universe is cruel and it kills me because they are so kindred in their chaos. But these kids now with their Instagram eyes clicking out likes live, turning this library lesson into a love fest under those fluorescent lights, she was lit. The most maudlin I've been is when a mid-teen has said, Miss, I'm not creative. To tell that to a minor is murder. These kids are born of made of miracles and magic, and it's these moments that remind us it's okay to shine like a million Milky Way moons, that no one is nothing. Discovering your nerve is like Newton with the first nebulae. Olivia is an original. Her optimism is an opioid. The audience know their main pain comes from peer put-downs, the pressure to be perfect, pretty, prudish, but not a Playboy pin-up. This performance is a precedent for a new point of departure, a purification, a new beginning. This quiet girl who didn't quit is a hit. No questions, no queries, no comment, just quality. It's rare to see someone reborn in real time, rapping rhymes from another time, revealing her colours, full rainbow. Losing shame at school can seem like a sin. She's the soldier, the sacrifice, new sincerity, sorry, not sorry. Teenagers are tender, tumultuous creatures. What they go through is torture, like trying to sit on a tremor and keep it a secret. They underline their insecurities to the others unrelentingly, underscoring the ugliness. But this unearthing of talent before the tall poppy vultures makes that vanish, and everyone there decides invariably they won't be the victim to the vicious venom. They will be wonderful, wild and woke, and not numb up on Xanax. The youth are ready to yell, yelp, make the great barbaric yawp from the rooftops of the world. Australia will vote because the current government gets a zero on the yes-no test. Olivia and her Zeus-sized army are here to wake up the zombies, the zipped-up zealots, the 1% Zuckerbergs in their tax-free zoos. She's a confidence Christ. The cure, the plan. Olivia A. is the motherfucking zeitgeist.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome. Fuck. That was amazing. Thank you. Hang on. Just turn up my microphone. Here I am. Fuck, that was awesome. Two things I need to say about that. How great was that rap party?
Oh, so good. Everyone was on fire.
I've already had the wonderful Janelle De Silva as a guest from meeting her that evening.
Yeah, she melted me. Oh, she was so good.
She was incredible, and she was so great on the podcast. Check out that episode. I've got my eye on a couple of other people from that night because it was such a magical evening. I think there's clips of it on YouTube if you look up Rap Party. I'll drop them in the show notes. And also, is that like, I'd never thought of that. Is that true that like a lot of kids know that alphabet aerobics now
because of Daniel Radcliffe?
Yep. He really nailed it to the wall.
He was so amazing. And so every school I go into, and I go into a lot, there's always a kid that can do the whole thing, and they do it without breath, swell the whole alphabet.
That's phenomenal, the whole thing.
Yeah. Wow. And, like, and I'm like, how did you learn that? They're like, what, Eva, that's easy. Duh, miss. I can get up to D.
I've never even attempted it. I'll drop the link to Daniel Radcliffe's performance because it's fucking mind-blowing. Thank you. That was awesome. And that was the amazing Emily Zoe Baker, who I will be getting back on the show to do a full interview as well because she's incredible. And we have been coming at you on location at Golden Plains, which has been a fantastic experience. And I would also like to give a big shout out to our very, very generous supporters, Lux Country, new merch player on the scene, fresh out of Collingwood. They can produce hand quality merchandise. They make it themselves with their own magical hands for all kinds of things. And I'd also like to make mention that we are selling merch at Here More Than a Wheelin'. Now we do this free of charge to you, and that's fine. But if you'd like to show us some support, it would be wonderful if you could jump on the Lux Country More Than a Wheelin' online shopfront. And we've got a couple of caps up there. More Than a Wheelin' cap. Now I Want to Meet Your Dog from our first live show at Merry Creek Tavern that we did a few weeks back, which was a wonderful experience. And so that's a wonderful way for you to support the show, but also for you to get something in return. You get this awesome merch, and there'll be more things coming too. And if there's something you want in particular with the logo on, just let us know, and we could probably accommodate that, or to find people at Lux Country can. So please look up Lux Country, and if you're in a band, they can help you out. If you're doing anything, they can help you out, because they make some really great stuff there. So please check into Lux Country. Also, big shout out to Castaway Studios and my main man, my producer, Derek Myers, who does his magic fiddling of the knobs every week. Literally, whom without I would not be doing this show. So I owe him my gratitude. Thank you, Derek. Thank you, Castaway Studios. Thank you, Ben Tuffy Lee, for being my first guest on location at Golden Plains. Thank you, Emily Zoe Baker, And thank you to Ella Fornowska, who will be getting some sweet merchandise. I'll be in touch with you for being our Muse of the Week. And please send in those creative prompts any way you can. You can do it on the Facebooks, on the Instagram, on the Twitter. You can send them in the mail to me like somebody did, and I still don't know who sent that Journey of a Leaf poem. That's a beautiful mystery, and life is all about beautiful mysteries. So with that, I'm going to say Whelan out.